The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at the Zen Center of New York City, Fire Lotus Temple. Hojin Sensei is the abbot of the Zen Center and head priest at Zen Mountain Monastery.
Morning, Brooklyn. This is from The Hidden Lamp, Stories of Awakened Women, Case 99. Let's become enlightened together. The Australian nun, Chikwong Sunim, had the opportunity to meet 102-year-old Korean nun, Kyojeon Sunim, who had meditated for years. When Chikwong came into her presence, the old nun was sitting upright with a rosary of black beads and a rosary of white beads twirling together in the left hand, silently repeating her mantra and gazing into the space in front of her. The old nun grabbed Chikwong's hand and pulled her close. When Chikwong yelled in the hard of hearing nun's ear, "I'm a foreigner," The old nun held up the mingled black and white beads and said, "Let's practice together." When Chikwong asked the old nun about her past, she replied, "What past?" Then the old nun smiled and said, "Let's become enlightened together." So when I was reflecting on what I might speak about today, I was thinking about these holidays coming that just passed and are approaching, and how many of us will be at gatherings with friends and family. Some of us may not be meeting up with people for various reasons, choosing it or not choosing it. But I wanted to talk about relationships. That is something that is always happening. We are always in relationships. And so just something about relationship practice came up for me, especially with this koan, "Let's become enlightened together. Is that possible? Let's practice together." We often thought there should be a ninth gate to the eight gates, which is right relationship, that way in of practice with each other. And I got an email from one of our students this week, and she wrote, "Hi, happy holidays. I'm in North Carolina with my partner and their 102-year-old mother. She made us soup. And I was going to write back, 'How's she doing?' But there it was. She made us soup. She's 102. She made us soup." Amazing. So a little bit about koan practice, which is part of the Zen tradition, is they're seemingly paradoxical stories, but they take up the nature of reality, the non-dual aspect of reality, the non-separation, and how we often do separate, and so how to twirl these beads together at the same time. And so we're encouraged, and I encourage you, to be each part of this. Be Chikwong, the one who came in the presence of this old nun. That's you arriving in the presence of an old nun, 102 years old, sitting upright. Be the old nun, 102 years old. What might her practice be like? She's been practicing for a while. The old nun grabbing Chikwong, pulling her close, and her yelling in this hard of hearing nun's, "I'm a foreigner." And she said, "Let's practice together." And we often hear, all our life is practice. But I don't know if we actually believe that. Do we? Is it twirled together? I use believe in the sense of putting our whole heart into something that's true, that we don't believe that our practices all of our life, especially when difficulty comes up or we may not be sitting every day and we say, I haven't practiced. Like, sorry. Like, once you start, you actually can't turn away. It's really hard to not practice. Well, we're always practicing something. The question is maybe what? So we think practice might be something we do while we're on a retreat, or that when we're just on the cushion, sitting formal zazen, that's everything else is in another category. Maybe even in the way of the real thing that we want to do. Of course, it doesn't have to be like this, because it's actually not like this. Yet we live in separation, and our deepest values aren't necessarily integrated. We don't see it all as practicing our life, all of it. And we just completed the Anga with the Genjo Koan, which is the way of everyday life, where that's what Dogen was teaching us, that every aspect of our life is the way. When we cultivate a mind of practice, everything is part of practice, moving us towards, if we're studying the self and wanting to release ourselves from suffering and others, forgetting the self, allowing the discriminating mind when it's not needed to rest, to stop picking apart and analyzing and judging everything. Get out of the way of the way, Daito Roshi used to say. Get out of the way of the way. Be ordinary in that sense. Recognize and live in just the natural, ordinary, unhindered self nature. And things will arise, but we begin to see, do we want to proliferate and continue something that's not helpful? We do. But that's what we practice, is the mind that clings and catches and keeps the whole thing going and the suffering going. And then the next arrow. There's a couple principles, level principles about practicing. And I think in thinking about relationships, I think there is some ground level bedrock, if you will, to guide us in the practice of relating, which can be difficult and fraught. Likewise, open, very connected, receptive, expansive, right? Relationships can have everything. And one is, as practitioners, we practice to make the best of a situation that we're in. We often say, just bring everything to the path, right? Nothing is excluded. Every happiness, every misery, every mistake, every suffering, we try and bring it to our path, use it well, to open. And it's difficult to make a good argument of why we wouldn't try to make the best of a situation, other than we just don't want to. So why not make the best of a situation? Another part of this is that making the best of things is not automatic. No. Connection, being relational, it's not automatic. You know, I hear myself say, I hear people say, I want connection, connection, connection. There are times when it happens by itself. And when it does, it's beautiful. There's the energy, the synergy of that is so relational. It's like a symphony happening. And it seems with most of the people in our lives, especially these are those that we're close with, we have some work to do. Something to do to maintain a fresh beginner's mind in our meetings, or don't know mind, because there's so much in that relationship that has a past, especially if it was a hurtful past, right? And as I was working on this talk, it seemed the more we lean in towards when it's not going easy or well, those are always good practice places. And I share this not as someone who has mastery over these things. Anyone that knows me well knows that's true. There are relationships I very much need to practice deeply into to make a connection. And I find that within these kinds of practices, we discover in relationship with others that they only find legs if we're choosing a bigger, magnanimous heart, choosing relative bodhicitta, if we haven't seen the emptiness of all conditions, that we turn towards an enlightened view, a wanting of freedom for suffering for all beings, that bodhicitta, relative bodhicitta, an awakened heart and mind, as these nuns were doing with each other. Chi Kuang yelled in the Heart of Hearing Nun's ear, "I'm a foreigner." What's being a foreigner? When I read that line, I don't know, my mother came up because it seemed like she could never hear. She was always hard of hearing. And now she is hard of hearing for sure. But I don't know when she was in her 40s and 50s that she was so hard of hearing, but she didn't hear very well. Let's practice together. So this foreigner, I was thinking, what is this? I'm a foreigner. How does that strike you to shout back, "I'm a foreigner"? When have we felt like a foreigner? A feeling of being disconnected from our spiritual home, from people, a divine connection because of beliefs or past actions or something external coming towards us. Maybe she's encountering something so new, doesn't fit her way of thinking. Seeing this nun repeating, just sitting there upright, repeating her mantra, not interacting. I feel foreign. I'm a foreigner. I've sat in my front of my teacher and I felt like a foreigner. I felt like, I don't know if I'm in his world. Foreign to our psyche, to our conscious self. When Chi Kuang asked the old nun about her past, she replied, "What past?" What passed, and said, "Let's become enlightened together. What did this old nun attain that enabled her to sit quietly without, with an unmoving mind, simply repeating her mantra?" We get stuck on small things. We get stuck on old words, the past. We can't erase it. But we get stuck on it. Sometimes the desire is there to choose the bigger heart, and sometimes it's not. Sometimes we take the position of, "You choose me first. You make me feel comfortable first. You. Becomes the kind of contractual relationship. And then we get into a dispute. So this practice of choosing the larger heart is that we're not waiting for a bigger heart, waiting for someone or something to make us feel how we want to feel, giving us the reason to respect them, look at them. We want this way of being. We feel the rightness of it, to enlarge it and let that light in. So, where are we now? Where is this nun? Many of our relationships become disconnected because of this staying contracted and reactive. And some may stay for a while, and some may stay for a lifetime. I think as we practice, sometimes it's just a few hours. That's how you know something, practice is working. We may stay contracted for a bit of time, and sometimes it's a long time that we have to practice it. When we choose a bigger heart, we just have a bigger heart for ourselves, for others. Of course, there's situations where I'm talking about in general, because I know there's situations where we do have boundaries, where we don't see someone, right? We have no contact, and that's to be respected as well. But having a bigger heart is so inherently rewarding. And to remember in that we're not fixed. We don't have to maintain being contracted and reactive. It can happen in an instant where we choose something bigger. So there's some commentary on this koan. And she says, here's two people. In this koan, two people connecting, just sharing their life experience and their practice. Buddha said, if beings knew, as I know now, the results of giving and sharing, they would not eat without having given. Even if their last bite, even if it were their last bite, their last mouthful, they would not eat without having shared. Of course, Buddha's teaching, she says, is not only about sharing food, but about sharing whatever you can. And so the old nun shared her wisdom with Chi Kuang Sunim, reminding her, let's practice together. Let's just practice together. So what gets in the way of relating? Sometimes it's our concept of connection that can get in the way. I've noticed in my experience, carrying an idea of how I should feel when I'm in relationship with someone that would actually make it valuable. That gets in the way. And then to realize there's no one way that it feels all the time. I mean, it seems like obvious. Even with the same person, it's never the same. I mean, I see the residents just about every day. We're different people. All the time. I don't know them, actually. Can't relate in the same exact way. Connection is an ideal we might lean into, right? It's not some objective state where we say, here, this is what it should look like. If we do, yikes, it's definitely going to be a problem. So we might have a conversation with a dear friend, maybe a parent, a lot of resonance, simpatico, we're feeling great connection, feeling really met. And then we go to another gathering, and there's Uncle Irwin, who talks about the weather, sports, things to buy, funny videos, TV programs, politics maybe. Maybe it's Cousin Sal. If we say later, that's not as good as that former connection we had that was so connected and we could really feel it. What's the consequence of that? If we want to be intimate, we have to be the connection. We have to be the connection. Practice together. Even when somebody may not even know they're practicing, if one person is, I've talked about this a lot, then everyone is. If you're practicing and you see a Buddha before you, then everyone's practicing, but they may not know it. And you may not get what you want. Don't think, oh, there's a Buddha before me, I'm practicing, so I should get my returns. No, you just give the mind of Buddha as best you can. We lean in. What is actually here in this conversation? We have to get interested, curious, rather than what we can get from it, if it's feeling good to us, or we judge it, it's shallow. If we feel unseen, gee, they haven't asked a word about me. They're not meeting me, we think inside. Yeah, that might be true. But do we want that magnanimous heart? Do we want the connection? Just a question. What level are we working on? We're asked in this practice to constantly meet ourselves. And this is there happening all the time. So to practice together, we can turn to it and ask, what is actually here now? And let them, sometimes others stay in their lane. Let them be, let them live. And you might be saying, what the heck is she talking about? No way. Mm-mm. What is it if I extend myself? What would that be like? What would it be like to see where the connection takes place no matter what's happening? Because there will be some. There will be some. This is just a small example, but my sister lost her husband and she has a new one now after a few years, many years. And I stayed with her and he loves to cook. So he made breakfast and I took whatever he made, eggs and whatever. And at the table, I noticed he couldn't look at me at all. So we were talking, but he never looked at me. I'm used to that. I look, you know, for some it's a little strange. Kids do, but some adults don't. I was telling people, sometimes I have an empty seat on a train and I'm the one that like puts all my stuff off and above and makes it available, but I don't know. Something happens, right? Okay, it's all right, right? I noticed he wasn't looking, so I was like thinking like, I want to connect with him. Like, I'm not going to take it personally. It's okay. I don't need anything. But how can I find a way in? So I started talking about his chickens. What kind of chickens do you have? Because he has chickens. And then the chickens led to cooking. And we talked, and suddenly he was like taking little hits, right? And it started to grow. And like, now he looks at me. It's really exciting, but it's okay if he doesn't, right? It's easing in. When I first get there, no. But after a while, the connection starts to warm up and I can feel he wants it too, because most people do. Most people want that magnanimous connection. It's just there's a lot of fear in between us for good reasons. And it's generational. It's been passed down on and on and on and on. So this is a shift as a practitioner, how we can practice together. And it may not be much, and that's okay. We practice it. Without that, some result, like there's going to be this magnanimous heart connection, it could be quite subtle how the energy levels shift. and what we come away with in that interaction. So it's about using our skills to communicate with others, developing our skills. In the commentary, she says, in Zen training, teachers use all kinds of ways to help students see their conditions, blocks, and attachments. And this is only possible when we, both teachers and students, are not preoccupied with our own agendas. Only then can we stay in touch with what is happening moment to moment. Just like this older nun. No agenda, just staying in contact moment to moment. What's your past? Suddenly she shifts. What past? It's just you and me, honey. Just us two, right here, right now. Yes, I have a past. I have a past. Yes. But we're here. This is where life is taking place. Dogen, on embracing the ways of a bodhisattva, right? In Bodhisattva Shiso Shobo, outlines four key actions for a bodhisattva in connecting with others. First is non-greed, giving without exception, expectation of return. The second is giving loving words, using kind and beneficial speech. The third is beneficial action, engaging in helpful and constructive acts. And the last is identity action, being in the same boat by practicing solidarity and supporting others on their own terms. And for some of us, it might be really hard to break through indifference. That comes up. It can show up in different ways. Numbing, wanting to take off, closing down, or telling ourselves we don't care. That's the harder one, that we don't care. I don't care. I don't care. I don't care. If we're saying I don't care that many times, we must care. Why do we keep saying it? Remember, we're not fixed beings. Nothing is fixed. That if we have a moment of indifference, it's just a state of mind, a momentary state of mind. It's not some final configuration of how the relationship is to be. It's a moment, a configuration. And we can change it. You can change it. When there's a strong current that is not caring about someone, means that we're having a moment of indifference. And it can go under the radar if we don't notice it and become a steady feature of our personality. And we don't know it's there anymore. Yet. Some say the heart needs and wants to be open. Is there anything in your experience that shows you this? That that's what you want? Then when you have an indifferent heart, when we have an indifferent heart, which is not necessarily meanness, it's not necessarily meanness, more like a state of just feeling like a foreigner, feeling separate. I'm not going to extend my empathy. Is there something in us that shows us that's not the right direction? That's off. That doesn't help feel good here. It doesn't sit right here. And so if we can get still for a moment, we could see there's something else the heart wants to be attended to. And if we keep letting that going, we could see it just keeps making more disconnection. We get farther and farther away, feel more and more like a foreigner. And this cloak of loneliness can set in. And then we might wonder, how did this happen? How did this happen? There are studies that on the longevity of people who are stronger to the degree that they're socially engaged in a kind of community. Living close with others requires us to develop an endurance, for sure, with other people, patience, less indifference, perhaps. Brings out what we care about, being close to others. That's why residency is a must for monastics. We have to live in, if you're deciding that's your life, you have to be in residency for a while. We always speak about the power of our dining room practice. That's where it all takes place. Just being with others in the dining room, sharing a meal, having a discussion, and practicing that. Practicing that together. Where does the conversation go? How do we listen? How do we meet ourselves, meet others? So these two nuns are playing together. They're wrestling, the same as we do in relationships. In the commentary, she mentions, in our tradition, it takes three things to practice Zen: a great question, great doubt, great courage, perseverance, and great faith. Most of our reactions, what do they come from? From what someone said or didn't say to us, maybe when we were young, and we still have that tenderness, that hit that we carry on through to adults that we're still working with, right? We're still practicing that tender spot. So is the person that we were encountered with. We're ripening, we're maturing. So, to be curious. You know, I was telling someone, like, for years, because they were talking about meeting their parents over the holidays, and they didn't ask a thing about what their life was like. How many of us know this? And really, for like most of my monastic life, I never got asked anything as many times about, I know it's sad. It was nothing. Like, what's it like living in, what are you doing? How come you shave your head? It was like obvious, but never asked. Never asked. And I let be. And inside I would be boiling sometimes, like, why don't you ever ask about, you know? And I would just try and go into their life, maintain the connection. And eventually it started to shift. I don't know how. And we could also carry that through where we don't ask anyone anything about their life. We can do that too. But to meet someone who might feel like a foreigner, or we do, and just inquire, be curious. Oh, they're talking about television. Why do you like that? Why is that show important to you? Like, draw something out. Draw the connection out, if that's the level it's on. The weather, how do you make that into a connection? Talking about the weather. Is it possible? And when we do, it's a double win. We're given something. We can get out of our shell, and we can also enjoy getting to know someone. It's a double win. Relationships definitely enlarge our world, don't you think? To be curious about other people's lives. Zen practice, Zazen practice, and being with people are exactly the same. We shift into a receptive mode in Zazen, receiving mode. So it's not easy to bring forward old ideas into relationships, as I said, especially with a history of hurt. But how can we practice being skillful? It takes a real presence of mind that we have a new picture or none at all in our mind each time we meet. It's said that the impression we have of someone is based on the last encounter we had with them. So there might be a little something of that person or what we think of people that we'll bring forward into the next meeting and interact on that idea. And that is the relationship problem, I think. Bringing forward and interacting on a past idea. Both nuns were familiar with this practice, so they kept trying. To continue being a nun, one needs to have great faith in one's own Buddha nature and great courage to take care of this for all of one's life. So practicing together, responding in a fresh way. Can I see a human being who wants exactly what I want? To be safe, to live in peace, and to know and experience love. Can I connect with the deeper aspects that are shared between us instead of clashing on the surface details that can be so, so vastly different? It's giving a chance to someone, to ourself, to be yes and. Let's become enlightened together. And I'll end with a final wish from Dilgo Khyentse. May precious bodhicitta take its birth in those in whom it has not taken birth. And where it has been born, let it not decline, but swell and increase ever more and more. So I wish you all the best over this season. And in your encounters, I look forward to practicing together and becoming enlightened together. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about the Zen Center of New York City's programs, retreats, and residency, or to make a donation, please visit our website, zcnyc.org.